Welcome to Under the Radar, a show about independent iOS app development. I'm Marco Arment.
And I'm David Smith. Under the Radar is usually not longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
Happy iOS 18 submissions week, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very specific holiday.
Yes. Well, I think every profession, every hobby, every career has its own like lingo, and why not add holidays to it? So here we are, you know, between the iOS 18, release candidate tooling releases and the actual release of iOS 18. This is, of course, the week that we are all submitting all of our iOS 18 updates to the App Store. And kind of wanted to go over how, what we decided to do, how we feel about it, what kind of summer it was, and what kind of fall we expect it to be as a result of all this. And I guess I'll start out by kind of celebrating that I submitted my stuff to the App Store earlier this morning, and it's the first time in a long time that I think I'm going to be kind of on time to an OS update. Now, there's a lot of asterisks on that because I didn't actually do that much for it, and there also wasn't much for me to do with it. We'll get to that, but I didn't even do everything I could have done because, honestly, I didn't have time for all of it, but I did get out there on day one with, I think, the most important iOS 18 update, which is I will have icons for all of the tint modes for the home screen.
Nice.
I think that because whenever iOS updates in a way that like it radically changes the look and feel of something, if your app doesn't update to support that, so whether it's things like the iOS 7 theme, dark mode, different types of, icon widget styles or whatever, if you aren't there on day one, your app instantly looks old to everyone who installs iOS 18. And so I decided that was something that was pretty important. I'm celebrating a little bit of a milestone. This is not a big milestone, but these will be the first Overcast icons that I made myself.
Nice.
So, and granted, it's still using like the vectors of the Overcast logo that I didn't make, that like, real designers made. but this is the first time that I took on an icon design task myself for the outside icon of the app. And so it's a small celebration there. But one thing I didn't do is the Control Center widgets. And it's not because I don't think I will ever need them. It's because their value to the user for the context of my app, I think, is not high. And so they just were lower down on the priority list than certain other fires I had to be putting out over the last few weeks. So that just didn't make it yet. But I'll get there. But for the most part, my iOS 18 release is limited to icons, which I think is actually the most important thing.
And I think is going to be what so many people's iOS 18 update like changelog looks like. It's like, my widgets support tinting, and my icons support tinting and dark mode.
The funny thing, I didn't even put it in my changelog because I was afraid, like, okay, this year, what does Apple want us to do with, like, do we have to call it preparing for a future OS update? Or, like, there's always a rejection risk for mentioning the new OS, and some years they're sensitive about it, and some years they're not, and some reviewers are sensitive about it, and some reviewers are not, so you never know what you're going to get. So my big iOS 18 update of adding icons, I didn't even mention it in the changelog.
Yeah, no, I have the same thing. And I've heard, as every year, it is, maybe this is like a public service announcement, do not specifically mention an unreleased version of any Apple technology or device before it is actually released in your change logs. And so in this case, it meant you could say things like, and this is what I had in mind, it's like, support for tinted icons. It's like you can describe what the feature does. But if you said support for tinted icons coming in iOS 18, then you would likely get rejected. I mean, usually it's the metadata rejection. They ask you to change your thing, and it's fine. But mostly the issue is you get kicked back to the back of the queue. And this year, thankfully, oh my goodness, I was so, so glad when they gave us a week between submissions and release. It's like, that is very welcome. If anyone at Apple listening to this, thank you very much. It is much nicer than the like 24-hour notice window we've had in some years, and that is very unpleasant. One week is great. It's a little weird in terms of I don't know what to do with myself this week, but I will take that problem versus the other problem. But I'm glad that I didn't mention iOS 18, and so my submissions were able to go through successfully without any rejections for that reason anyway.
All right. Yeah, this was a good year for that. I appreciate the time as well, because I was a little nervous because the iPhone event went by without them mentioning a release date, and so we had to do a little bit of digging afterwards to find out, like, how bad is it going to be? But no, it's fine.
No, it's great. I think in a lot of ways it speaks to, I think this year, I mean, it's nice too that it doesn't affect me too much, but all of the platforms are being released on the same day, which is also very appreciative in some ways. Like, you don't have this weird situation where macOS is coming out 2 weeks later than this, or iPadOS is coming out at a different time, and like everything's all synced up, which is very much appreciated as well. Like, it's in that sense, this rollout has, this fall, the way it's all planned out, has been very reasonable and humane to us in that regard, that there's not this weird thing. Like, next Monday will be very hectic, but next Monday, you know, is going to be when everything happens. And so we can move forward from that in a very directive, straightforward way, which, you know, is great. And on the plus, I may say, like, I submitted all my updates, as soon as I possibly could. It was a very, that night is always a very strange night. And maybe this is interesting behind the scenes, but it's this very strange, like, I'm trying, Apple doesn't specifically say when the new tool set will be released, and they don't say when, App Store Connect will support it, or when Xcode Cloud, if you use that, will get the new builds to be able to do things. And so it's this really strange process of, you know, refreshing the developer portal until the new version of Xcode comes out. And then typically what I do is I use Xcode Cloud for all of my regular, like, rolling builds. But for this particular build, I do a manual build and submit an archive, because typically App Store Connect supports the new version of Xcode, like the final gold master version of it, before Xcode Cloud does. And it's not that it particularly matters. And like I said, in this case, we had a week, but at the same time, I would rather know if I'm going to be rejected sooner rather than later. And so I'd rather be towards the front of the queue than at the back of the queue. And so I'm just, you know, sort of sitting there in Xcode once all my builds are up and validated. And, you know, I've done my sort of smoke test to make sure that, you know, I can build and run it on the simulator on the new devices, you know. So in this case, on the new especially because we had new screen sizes, you know, pixel wise, I mean, my layouts aren't very pixel, you know, precise anymore, so it's less of an issue than it may have used to be in, you know, years gone by. But do a quick test, make sure everything seems to work reasonably, run it on a testing phone, make sure nothing completely breaks. And, you know, with the obviously in the back of my mind, if all week I do testing, that's essentially what I've been doing ever since. If I find something, I can always, you know, pull the submission and resubmit it. But then I'm just sitting there trying to get it in the queue. And this year, you know, I was in there. It seemed like, based on how soon after I heard reports that Xcode was, the submissions were being accepted, I was in the first 10, 15 minutes probably with all my submissions. And, you know, they all went through and got approved within about 24 hours, which was very welcome. That it was, you know, and especially this year, there were a couple of things in WidgetSmith in particular where, not that it was, you know, I guess maybe I was being ambitious with some of the features, and I'll probably talk about them on the next episode. I don't want to get into exactly what the ambition was at this point yet, but there were some features of what I was doing that I felt were, you know, pushing boundaries in good ways, that I'm being ambitious and tackling interesting problems and creating some really cool opportunities for my users. And those are the kinds of things that you just never know. Like, it could go super awesome and, you know, Apple is excited about it, or they could be the opposite of excited about it. And then, discovering that is always a difficult thing. But in this case, they seemed perfectly happy with it. Who knows if they're excited yet, but certainly the app review team didn't have any problems with what I was doing, which was a welcome thing to know 24 hours after. And I'm not instead, you know, scrambling this week, working on how to get it released. I will say something that I did notice is, I think there's some ambiguity about that people get a bit confused about with if they're in this situation, will your update actually go out to the App Store, or will it wait until iOS 18? And essentially, my understanding of the way that this works, just sort of mentioning in case anyone's confused, is if your minimum deployment target is the new OS. So in this case, if your minimum deployment target was iOS 18, so you're building an app that takes advantage of an iOS 18 only feature, for example. If that's the case, regardless of whether you say release to the App Store or not, you know, hold for release, you'll go into a status called, I think it's waiting for Apple, waiting for Apple release. And so it will stay there until Apple has pushed out, in this case, iOS 18. However, if you have a lower deployment target, so say use of, you know, like WidgetSmith supports iOS 14 and above still, even though I built this with the release candidate, you know, the final version of Xcode 16, if I wanted to, I could push that build out right now. And if you don't have the hold for developer release, it would have just gone out automatically to the whole App Store right away. And whether or not you would do that, I think depends a lot on what the content of your feature is. You know, like for me, all of the features here are focused on iOS 18. I want to do marketing around iOS 18. I don't want to create the confusion of showing features in my like what's new area that users couldn't get with that, you know, that a typical user isn't going to go and install the public beta of iOS 18, even though it's the final version of the public beta, just to get a feature. Like, it's asking for trouble. And so instead, I tend to hold it manually and then push that out. You know, in this case, next Monday morning, I will manually release it out to the App Store once iOS 18 is released or thereabouts. I may do it slightly on the early side just to avoid CDN issues. Usually, I think Apple tends to push these things out early Pacific time, it seems to be, or, you know, sort of early in the day on Monday is when I expect it to go out. And so I may push it at that point. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that as a ambiguity that can sometimes, I saw a lot of people being confused, or had a few people who had their iOS 18 release go out to the world, you know, yesterday, which is not what they intended. And so just something to be careful of and aware of, that if you don't hold for release, unless your minimum deployment target is the new OS, then it'll just go out. But yeah, otherwise the summer went reasonably well. Like, there were definitely a few things that threw me for a loop, that were a bit of a surprise. I think weirdly, like every year, it doesn't particularly matter ultimately in the long term, but every year there's a different sort of rhythm I find to the betas and how things changes. And, you know, you can kind of vaguely get a sense, within Apple of maybe internally they had different branches or different loops. Like, there's different things going on there. And it's like this year, I think it was beta 6, developer beta 6 was like, everything got turned upside down. Was the release was like this weird thing where the first couple months, of the summer, things were one way, and then in beta 6, a bunch of things changed, and a bunch of things, you know, in my case, it was particularly relevant for the way that Control Center widgets worked, and, you know, beta 6, suddenly they all got sort of changed fundamentally, and I had to sort of scramble a bit to rebuild things, and a bunch of things just sort of broke in beta 6, and then subsequently got fixed, and it was one of those weird ones where it's like, huh, like, was that the magic point where there have been all these branches that have been, you know, finally merged in, and they were dealing with the conflicts, and then suddenly it's like, they have this one sort of discontinuity where things got really weird. But other than that, it's been, you know, been fairly well. And we've said it many times, it's a very light year for most developers. I was busy in terms of, especially someone who makes widgets, there's a new widget type. So I've been busy. There's some stylistic changes to iOS that meant that some other new aesthetic options were possible. So I've been supporting those. But the fundamentally, there isn't this massive new thing. And, you know, even watching the Apple event on Monday, the big thing that Apple was very focused on, it was Apple Intelligence. And at that point, this isn't shipping, and the developer-focused features of that aren't yet shipping. If you happened to have one of the Apple Intelligence domains that, and none of my apps particularly align to, but even if I had one of those, there wouldn't be anything for me to ship at this point. So it's like, it's a quiet thing in that regard, and it's just quiet in general, which is not unwelcome, but it's definitely strange kind of coming into it. I think, you know, it'll be exciting in some ways. I think there are some cool things, and iOS 18, you know, is very focused on home screen customization, so I'm very happy about that. There's no deep technical thing that I need to do, or massive new API that I have to adopt. And certainly because I don't have to make a camera app, I don't have the situation where now you'd have to be, if I made a camera app, of sort of scrambling to support the camera control in the new phones, without, you know, having physical access to one, or, you know, that's camera features you can't test in the simulator. And so that would be a bit awkward. I feel a bit frantic, but thankfully that's not my situation.
And honestly, on that point, I am a little disappointed, I think, that the API for camera control is only available when you have a camera capture session running. So therefore, most apps can't use it. I was thinking at first, like, oh, maybe it'd be interesting to have, like, you know, an Overcast speed control in there or something. You know, just thought, like, maybe I could put some controls in there, you know, for non-camera apps. But I think the answer so far is you can't do that, technically speaking. Not to mention, you know, App Review might not let you even if you could. But it seems like what their goal for the camera control is really just, this is only for camera type apps. This is not a general purpose input like the, you know, Digital Crown or something. Like, it isn't a scroll wheel. It isn't an extra button for your apps to use. It is just for camera controls in camera apps. You know, theirs or third party. And, you know, good on them for actually having an API on day one for third party camera apps. That is noteworthy, especially one that's so full featured as this one. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, for the rest of us, it's not gonna be a thing our apps can use. And that's kind of the theme of the iOS 18 release in general, is like there's a few things that are really cool that either all apps can't use or most apps can't use. So, you know, the most apps thing is the camera control, I think. And then the all apps thing is Apple Intelligence. Like, so far, not only can apps not do the Apple Intelligence features yet, or really, as far as I can tell, I don't think we have any new capabilities that are based on Apple's new foundation models. I don't think any of those are exposed to the APIs yet. And so not only do we have no way to use it, but they haven't really even told us what the API will be in the future. Like, it isn't like there's a pre-release API. All we know is, generally speaking, it'll be based on app intents. If we make app intents, that Apple Intelligence and Siri will be able to hook into them by reading them and doing something. But we don't really know. I mean, we barely even know. I don't even know if that's official. Like, we've heard, you know, various people say that here and there. And we have no documentation on that. We have no timeline on that. All we know is, like, later. That's not even shipping in early, you know, iOS 18.1 or 18.2, probably. That's probably going to be, like, a spring or, you know, later thing. So we really have nothing that we can do with Apple Intelligence. And I think that's going to put us in a bit of an awkward position with customer expectations, because Apple is pushing this like crazy. They are, and of course, they're going to continue pushing Apple Intelligence as much as they possibly can. And Apple's own apps are going to have a lot of, you know, fun integrations and AI-based features that third-party apps will not be able to hook into. The only way for third-party apps to do any kind of AI-based feature so far is to bundle in our own models, which is obviously a very heavy, inefficient method of doing things, and it doesn't have any of the advantages of Apple Intelligence, like, you know, the optimized for the device kind of nature of it, the, you know, the cloud potential for running things in the private cloud. Like, there's all sorts of things Apple Intelligence will be able to do that developers just have no access to. And this is somewhat unusual. You know, usually when Apple adds massive new platform technical features, usually, you know, there's APIs for them, and developers can use those APIs, and we can make our apps as good as Apple's, or they can work the same way as Apple's. And in this case, so far, the entire category of features called Apple Intelligence, we just have nothing we can do with that yet. And I do worry that our customers will see all of Apple stuff and say, "Hey, why can't you support this? Like, is that gonna cause negative customer impressions of our apps, or is it gonna give us negative reviews? Like, one star, this app has not supported Apple Intelligence yet." I really kind of worry about that, about customer perceptions and expectations around that. Not to mention the fact that it would be concerning to me if Apple released a giant new technology that ran almost entirely on device and didn't give developers any access to it, because that's very much unlike them. Again, like, usually their API story is very strong. They're usually very good at giving us great APIs to do things in our apps to make our apps really great. So I hope that the reason why we literally can't do anything with Apple Intelligence yet, I hope it's just because it's so early, that it seems pretty clear that Apple is just barely getting this out on time. This is really coming down to the wire here. You know, the new iPhones are going to ship without Apple Intelligence, which is, you know, I think if there was any way for them to hit the iPhone release date as a deadline, they would have, because that's a big deal. So obviously, like, they're obviously, you know, it's really going to be coming in hot. And I think the Apple Intelligence features are going to take the entire year to even roll out to what they showed in WWDC, let alone anything, you know, in the future. So this is really going to be kind of a year of Apple Intelligence beta and promises and a little bit of functionality. But ultimately, I don't expect to see most of that functionality probably till next year. But if our users keep expecting our apps to be as good as Apple's apps in these areas, they won't be. And I think that's going to hurt us. But again, hopefully that's a temporary thing. And maybe by next summer, maybe iOS 19 will have, you know, a full-blown API for us to do more with this stuff. I really hope it will. So in lieu of a sponsor this episode, we are going to talk about Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. The Relay community is coming together once again to support the life-saving work of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So we've now hit a staggering $3 million raised since we started this campaign in 2019. And thanks to the incredible generosity of the Relay community, Relay will now be recognized on the wall inside the hospital that highlights corporations and organizations with exceptional fundraising efforts for St. Jude. And with your continued support, we hope to see the Relay name in the halls of St. Jude for years to come. Now, St. Jude is headquartered in Memphis, Tennessee, but its work has a global impact. They've treated children from all 50 states and around the world. About 90% of children at risk for developing cancer live in low- and middle-income countries, and that's unacceptable to St. Jude. So they launched St. Jude Global to ensure that every child with cancer and other catastrophic diseases has access to quality care and treatment no matter where they live. St. Jude Global shares knowledge, technology, and expertise with healthcare institutions, researchers, and fundraisers across the entire world to improve survival rates in their home countries. So they train the doctors and researchers of tomorrow, they host conferences, they share skills, and they help nonprofits raise awareness and build sustainable sources of revenue to support children in their countries with cancer and other blood disorders. They provide 14 different programs for global healthcare staff on everything from ICU care and infection prevention to metrics tracking and lab medicine. So there's so much more that St. Jude does. They collaborate with more than 400 partners in St. Jude Global, representing more than 80 countries and growing. So all this work is very far-reaching. So this is a great place to donate your money. It is an amazing community that we have here, and the Relay community has really adopted this as its own. It's so easy for you to get involved. So you can actually go to stjude.org/relay. You can register to create your own fundraiser to join us in raising money for St. Jude. And of course, you can donate money directly as well. So you can donate, you can start your own group. You can share your fundraiser with your friends and family to spread the word about this amazing mission. And of course, we would love your direct donations instead or as well if you'd like. So when we rally for a common cause, we believe more than a community. We become beacons of hope for all. So we are asking all of you to join Relay and St. Jude this September for Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Together, we can help cure childhood cancer. Go to stjude.org/relay to donate or create your own campaign today. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And so I guess, yeah, I think as I think about Apple Intelligence and where it's going, because it is interesting, because I think what you're saying is true, but is also slightly, they have said, you know, there were sessions at WWDC where they talked about what's, you know, how we're going to integrate with Apple Intelligence to start with, that there's this App Intent system with domains, that if you have, you know, essentially to create the semi-structured way that we could interact. And initially, like the reason most of us say like there's nothing for us to do is the initial domain set is very low. That if you happen to have, I think like one of them comes to mind, if you're a journaling app, there's a way that you can tie into Apple Intelligence, and there's a few others. And I expect and hope that over time that will expand. But I think it is very strange. And I think more fundamentally, the thing that I struggle with it is the, I think it is going to create a lot of just fundamental confusion with customers. I mean, I'm confused as someone who this is my bread and butter. This is what, you know, what I live and breathe and understand and read all the news and everything. Like, what's coming out when? What does it actually mean? It doesn't have this clear answer. And so that is just going to be confusing probably for the next several years of like, what is Apple Intelligence? What does it mean? Who gets it? What phones have it? If you have this, but not that, like, it's going to be create this really awkward time. I mean, in some way, and it's just, it's tricky because Apple is putting it so front and center, that, you know, that the knock-on effect of them creating ambiguity and confusion for their customers is inevitably that it's going to be something that's going to manifest with us and our customers and asking, you know, why can't I ask Siri to do something? You know, I want Siri to, you know, to create widgets for me. It's like, okay, well, I can't really do that. Certainly not in the way that you're expecting right now. It's not that you could just be like, I'm thinking of a widget. I want it to have, you know, maybe a pastel green background, and I want it to have this text, and I want it to look like this. Like, that is conceptually something that maybe someday you'll be able to do with some kind of a very advanced voice command system there. But that is very far off, if at all, on the horizon. And so I think there's going to be a lot of confusion. And as soon as you create some amount of power in the system, you also create, you know, an equivalent amount of expectation. And so I think it's going to be awkward, to say the least, going forward.
Yeah, and again, this is, it's just, it's going to be in so much flux for a while that I think this is going to be some, this is going to be like a source of friction that we're going to have to fight through. Certainly, I think the best ways to be prepared for this are to, you know, take advantage, like start writing app intents, start structuring your app to work with those. It does seem like it also involves Spotlight, so start using maybe Spotlight indexing features. Start submitting stuff that way. You know, maybe donate more intents to the system and in the intents API. Ways like that. That, like, if there's been these new APIs over the years that have done something that you're not quite sure your app really benefits from, but it adds some kind of structured data to the OS about how to use your app and what to do with it. I think that all of those things will probably be likely to help here. So, you know, get your app prepared for all of that by adopting all those technologies, and you'll probably be in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. But in the meantime, I guess we can focus on, you know, it's like iOS 18 is coming in. It's in a few days as we're recording, and I guess best of, you know, it's like, I hope everything goes well for all of our listeners. If you have an iOS update coming out, I mean, this is an exciting time. Some of my most impactful, well, I guess really all of my very, very impactful launches have tended to coincide with iOS releases. And so, you know, you never know. Like, I think the uncertainty, but sort of expectation of that can be really exciting. And I think, you know, I think it's a very fun time to be an app developer as you're putting these things out. It's this weird situation where I feel like most of us are working somewhat in secret over the summer. And so it's this, like, we're playing this game of poker where we're keeping our cards, you know, close to our vest. And then, you know, next Monday we'll suddenly all, you know, reveal what we've been working on, and you get to discover, like, have you been going in a totally different direction to everyone else, which could be good or bad, depending on, which, you know, how the market plays out. But it's certainly exciting nevertheless to have. And honestly, I do kind of look forward to just being out of that phase of where secrecy is a bit more, a part of it, and be able to just talk about, you know, what I'm working on, what's exciting, and that, just see what customers think, because I think that is really exciting to see, you know, are the things that I've been building actually going to resonate? Are people, even at a most basic sense, like, are people going to use tinted home screens or not? Like, is that going to be super popular, or is it going to go nowhere and no one's really going to do it? Like, at this point, it's hard to say. I think it could go either way. And I think I have long since learned that trying to predict users' behavior, especially from an aesthetic perspective, which is something that I've spent a lot of time trying to do, is incredibly difficult. That it's hard, you know, it's very subjective, it's very individual to people, and so it's very hard to predict. And that's exciting, and that's fun, and, you know, hope everyone's launches go well next week.
Best luck, everybody, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.